Smith v. City of Chicago. Mr. Peters.
Good morning, Your Honors. Tom Peters on behalf of the plaintiffs. This court should reverse and remand this case to the district court with instructions that the district court apply the due process test in the Matthews case rather than the speedy trial test from the Barker versus Wingo test. That's the relief that is warranted on this in this case because for approximately the past 30 years, Matthews has been the orthodox standard whenever the due process issue was whether a property owner or other person was entitled to some form of post-deprivation relief that preceded the trial on the merits. We know that that is the case because Matthews has been applied whenever that has been the issue in at least, by my count, 20, if not more, Supreme Court cases.
When, on your view, would the city have to offer this interim forfeiture hearing?
I think that depends on a development of the facts, which, of course, has not occurred so far, and it could be. I would suspect that they would have to provide, for example, a provision for bond, which is common in many other states and in the federal government, when the property that is seized is a vehicle. And I think that that probably should occur
what
with...
What do you mean provision for bond? You mean giving them the car back and they post a bond?
Posting of a bond in return.
But what if the car is evidence? What if you know, it's got a secret drug compartment or something, so the government wants to hold it for evidence?
If that were the case...
And you're contesting, you know, the owner says, no, there's no secret drug compartment. That's where I hide my pornographic tapes or something. So,
well, they can probably hold it for evidence even then. Your Honor, the answer to that is that the bond determination would not necessarily apply in every case. I think if the state had a legitimate interest.
How about the timing then? So your car has been seized and you want it back, and you're saying, you know, understandably, of course, you don't want to wait a year. So how, on the other hand, the state can't have the hearing in a day. So what should we adopt as a rule?
Well, I think based on the decisions from other state courts and from statutes in other courts, it would be reasonable for the state to hold some form of informal hearing within 2 or 3 weeks of the seizure. That would not be an undue burden on the city or the state. It would seem to me that the hearing itself is not a full-blown evidentiary hearing. Of course, as I said before, Your Honor,
Will you say other states have provisions for this?
Yes, many states have provisions for.
So would you be content if we just held that the Illinois statute is too long and then go back to the drawing boards or what?
I think that, the Illinois statute is completely silent on the issue of when or...
I understand, but that the failure to provide for an interim hearing is unconstitutional.
Yes.
And they'd have to do something.
They would have to do something, and that, what something they would have to do, it seems to me, would be contingent on facts which are not yet developed in the record. You know, perhaps... The city or the state could make a showing that 2 or 3 weeks, my suggestion, is too fast. On the other hand, perhaps we could show that bond could easily be set and posted within a matter of hours or days. After all, in the federal system, a person can post bond and have the car released within a matter of a few days. So it doesn't seem to me that that would be an undue burden on the city or the state. That is a test which should be applied in this case rather than the Barker versus Wingo test, which is what the district court had to apply because of a previous decision from this court.
I don't know actually why you concede. You mean the Jones decision or another decision?
The Jones decision.
Well, I don't know why you concede that. It's because isn't the Jones decision just about, you know, class, what's required for a class action? And
well, no, Your Honor, that's not the way I recall it. And since I was the one who lost that case, I think I've got a fairly good recollection of it.
Scars are still evident, aren't they?
I mean, that's all the holding is, class certification being appropriate.
Well, but Judge Aspin had denied it on the grounds that it failed to state a claim as well, and I believe the discussion in the case, if it were just that the class certification were denied, the case should have been remanded to the district court on the issue of damages for the individuals, but that wasn't the relief that was granted. The case itself, the dismissal of the case was upheld by this court. So from that, I would take it that the courts in that case was saying that the standard that we're going to apply is Barker, not Matthews, and on Barker you lose.
And they say their claims do not typify those of the purported class members. I don't know what that has to do with your arguments.
Well, that was included in the Jones decision because if you apply the Barker test, then everybody's individual facts are going to be different. The length of the...
That's a good reason not to apply the Barker test, right?
Yes, that's precisely what our point is.
Well, I don't see any discussion here of Matthews and Eldridge and why it shouldn't apply and all that.
Matthews is not mentioned, nor is Good, which was decided before that decision.
You're doing something very odd, which is rather than trying to distinguish a case, which is not obviously controlling, you try to expand its holding to screw you, and
well,
then
that's
ask us to, over,
that's
then ask
not
us
my
to
intention,
overrule
right.
it. I don't understand it. Usually we're asked to narrow a case, you know, distinguish it.
Well, Your Honor, I believe upon reading that case that this is what I have to do. But obviously, if the court thinks that the Jones decision does not literally apply to this case, and that of course makes it easier for the court to grant the relief that I'm requesting.
I think the problem you face under Jones is maintaining this as a class action. I don't know how important that is to you because, you know, the situation of every forfeiture is different. If you're asking for damages or something like that, you have to have separate hearings.
That would be correct, Your Honor, but the point of our case and the relief we request...
Injunctive relief?
We wanted injunctive relief,
so... It doesn't matter whether you have a class action or one plaintiff.
That's true, Your Honor.
Right.
So the point...
Why worry about Jones, which is about class certification?
Well, if your understanding of Jones is correct and mine is incorrect, which is probably the case...
I don't actually have a clear understanding. I don't have a clear understanding of Jones. I find it rather... opaque. Disrespect to Judge Rovner, but
Let me ask you a question.
None of us.
No, we're. I'm not as up on these things as my Chicago colleagues, but you talked when you started that if they would just have a quick hearing and set bond or something like that, that would satisfy you. Now, I would think bond in these seizure cases would be something equal to the value. One of these is a 15-year-old Chevy Caprice, so you'd have to post the value of that. And if you had $10,000 cash in the trunk of your car and that was seized, you'd have to post that kind of money to get it back, wouldn't you? I mean, I just don't understand what the...
Well,
what you would want in terms of bond in these kind of cases?
Well, typically, Your Honor, I mean, first of all, let me say that if it's cash, then I don't think that the bond posting provision would apply.
Okay,
so,
half of these cases are cash and half are cars.
And what I'm suggesting that when the seizure is of personal property, such as a car, the city and the state could apply a system similar to the federal system, which allows for posting of a bond. The bond itself is significantly less in value. I mean, the cash you put up is less in value for the bond than the actual value of the car. When the personal property that is seized is cash, then of course I'm not suggesting that you post cash to get cash. But that was only, you know, one part of what I was suggesting. What I'm suggesting is that there could be, for example, a provision which should be fleshed out upon return to the district court for the posting of some form of bond to return personal property other than cash. In addition to that, it seems to me there should be some form of informal probable cause determination, or, you know, whether the scope of that hearing is contingent on facts that we don't yet know. But right now, there is no hearing. And what I'm suggesting is that there be some form of hearing within a matter of weeks after the seizure, since we know that in all probability, the actual trial itself is going to be months, if not a year or more down the line. I see that my time is up, so.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Peters. Mr. Castiglione?
Your Honors, good morning, and may it please the Court. I'm Paul Castiglione, and I represent State's Attorney Richard Devine in this matter. I will be addressing the due process issue. Mr. Enriquez from the City of Chicago will be addressing the Monell issue. Your Honors, in Jones versus Takaki.
I don't think you should rely on Jones.
Well, in Jones, Your Honor, the court.
There's no reasoning. I don't see any reasoning that bears. I don't see a discussion of a very, very simple issue, which is that you can't just take a person's property away and say, come back in 20 years and we'll have a hearing to see whether it's really your property.
Well, Jones did two things. It affirmed a grant of summary judgment.
Yeah, but look, that can't be right, right? It can't be right. City can take your property and say, you know, in 20 years, courts are busy, we'll have a hearing.
That would almost certainly be a violation of due process. I think with Jones, like 8850, upon which it relied and which it followed, determined what test would be appropriate and ultimately decided the Barker speedy trial test made.
Oh, forget the test. There has to be, as you know, your opponent, Mr. Peters, says, there has to be a probable cause hearing at some reasonable time, right?
Right.
Okay, so what's that reasonable time?
But this isn't really about probable cause. There's no even allegation that probable cause wasn't met in this case. The problem is that sometimes cash or sometimes...
Well, suppose your car disappears and it turns out it's in the custody of the city and you want it back. What do you do?
Well, if it's seized pursuant to the statute at issue here...
Well, I don't know whether it's seized, what it's seized pursuant to. It's just disappeared, right?
Well, if it's a possible instrumentality in a crime, that would affect the amount of time it would take to get to hearing. And that's, I think, ultimately what Barker recognizes.
Well, suppose you call the police department, you say it's been seized because it's a possible instrumentality of crime.
Well, if
so what do you do next?
If it's been seized and it's gonna, it is an instrumentality of a crime,
well,
that's going to be prosecuted.
You don't concede. The owner doesn't concede that it's a possible.
Where is the issue of the nexus between the crime and the thing seized? Where does that take place? Who makes that decision and when?
I think ultimately it would be when the prosecution goes to trial, if it does.
How long does the owner of the property have to wait for the government to make up its mind to proceed?
Well, in 1850 it was 18 months, and ultimately the court said based on the time it took to investigate the crime, that didn't violate
due
process.
But how do we know you're investigating the crime? How is there any knowledge that you're investigating the crime or just holding the property because you damn well don't want to give it back?
Well, if that was the case, Your Honor, and that's what it was held improperly, then there probably would be a due
your
process.
Your position, as you describe it, is preposterous. Maybe there's more. I mean, suppose the police arrest someone, and they put him in jail, and he says, you know, I'm innocent. I'd like to get out. The police say, well, you know, it takes a long time to investigate these things, and you know, 18 months or so, we'll be ready to make a determination whether we think you should be prosecuted, and then we'll bring you to a magistrate.
Well, obviously that couldn't
be done.
Well,
what's obvious about it to you? Now you think, well, it's all right. You didn't put me in jail. You put my children in jail. No, you concede that was. But now, what if you take my property and put it in your police warehouse?
And
I have to wait 18 months to have any
Well, I think what 8850 said, it's
quasi-judicial an... quasi-judicial determination or any sort
to find out
whether there's probable cause to think that it's related to a crime?
What does the statute say that you think is important?
Well, the statute... all right.
Well, you were reading from some... You were about to say something and never got...
Well, no, what I was going to say is that the four-part test that 8850 applied is it invites an ad hoc determination on a case-by-case basis. By the court that eventually...
Eventually, yes. But what about before then?
Who makes the preliminary decision? The police?
Well, in terms of seizing the property initially?
The police and the prosecutor make a decision.
That's correct.
And it stops there until they decide to move forward.
That's correct.
Should there be a time limit between when they decide they were going to seize it and when they have to make a decision as to whether they're going to move forward?
Well, I think at some point it would violate due process.
Should there be an absolute? Should there be, say, 90 days you have to do this or 6 months to do this? Or because in some cases you can come in and show that it's going to take a lot more. I can, you know, just show that it's going to take 5 years to do this because we've been took them 20 years to do it. There's no statute on murder, et cetera.
Right.
But shouldn't there be some place, sometime, where you have to say in front of a judicial officer, we are seizing this, we have a nexus between crime, and this is our nexus, and this is what it is?
Well, I will say the U.S. Supreme Court hasn't required that yet. In fact, they've not said that. I don't think there should be, Your Honor. I think if there is, in fact, ultimately...
Remarkable. That's a really remarkable argument.
Well, if in fact, the police over, you know,
suppose you go outside after this argument, your car is gone.
Well,
and you call
different.
The police, and they say, yeah, well, we think it might be an instrumentality of crime. We're investigating. Maybe 18 months to get your car back.
If I were charged with a crime or if that car was used...
You're not charged with anything. They just think it's a possible instrumentality. You're not prosecuted yet.
And if they held it indefinitely without any without probable cause...
Indefinitely, just for 18 months.
When can I get it back? Suppose I come in the next day and say I want my property.
Well, the government at some point could file a forfeiture action. And
it doesn't bother.
But they don't. If you file a forfeiture action, I've got no problem at all. I don't think you
And the property owner could file some sort of petition for remission.
What does that mean? File a petition with whom?
If it was a customs case, for example. That's
a customs case? We're not talking about a customs case.
I understand that, Judge.
Case.
And you're asking examples how you get it back. I think you'd have to challenge the underlying criminal prosecution.
You haven't been prosecuted yet.
I understand that, Your Honor. And in fact, ultimately, if the government holds property indefinitely, there probably would be a due process violation. The question
is ridiculous.
What, I see my time has expired. If I may.
Thank you very much.
What's that? Thank you, Your Honor.
Enriquez?
May it please the court, in addition to the arguments that Mr. Castiglione just addressed, the district court...
Mr. tried to present, but go ahead.
The district court's judgment dismissing this action can be affirmed as to the city and its police superintendent on an alternative ground. Specifically, the city could not be liable to the plaintiffs under Section 1983 since city employees, in not providing a probable cause hearing to plaintiffs after seizing their property, acted pursuant to a state statute and not a policy or custom attributable to the city. And the superintendent could not be personally liable to plaintiffs under 19.
Well, I think, aren't the plaintiffs seeking injunctive relief?
Yes, they are. And what's at stake is we're not accountable. We are not the tortfeasor.
Well, could you be responsive to the injunctive proceeding? That is, if they see the injunction would read, if you seize property, you have a reasonable time and set some reasonable time, or at least give you use just that. You have to have a hearing someplace. Certainly,
if the court were to issue a declaratory judgment or some form of relief like that, we would comply with whatever happens. We comply with the statute.
That's not liability. It's just saying you would comply if the court said you have 6 weeks or 6 months to do this, and that's in
law. That's correct. I mean, my understanding is that this is a very delicate statute. It involves a lot of interests, local, county, state.
Oh, yeah.
And if the statute were to be enjoined, or if there were declaratory judgment, it would have to go back to the drawing board. Whatever new statute came out, we would comply with it. We've complied with the current one. We'd comply with it.
What is it you're worried about? Why are you here?
Well, among other things, of course, attorney's fees. We're simply not the responsible party here.
What does that matter? If you do the seizure and you're violating the Constitution, what does it matter whether you're...
Well, if our employees did, because our employees did the seizure, if they're in violation...
There's no rule presently saying that you're violating anybody's constitutional rights, if I recall correctly.
There is no rule.
There is no rule. So that if there was one, it would have to start from this case, so that you have no basis for ruling saying that you violated a known constitutional
That's
right.
correct. Officers are operating consistently with state law.
Well, do you have any objection to a hearing on whether or not that is true? Do you think Jones is fully ruling in this case?
I'm sorry, I didn't follow that.
Probably I misstated it then, because you are obviously a man of discernment.
Right.
The case went back down for hearing on the injunction, because all this is your dismissal, and it went back down for hearing on the injunction, would you participate fully in that hearing, looking only to see what the heck was reasonable? Is that the position you want? Because there is no present rule saying that you...
Well, we think we're just a stakeholder. We're a bystander. This is a state statute, an Illinois state statute,
that has created
a comprehensive system for forfeiture post-seizure. It sets out time limits for when we have to report things to the Illinois State Police.
Whether or not there's a hearing on the injunction, you don't care. You're indifferent.
Right. We're indifferent. We would comply with anything. Now, of course, any burdens that are placed on the city would cost the city money, and we obviously understand that this is something perhaps for the Illinois legislature to decide if this court were to grant injunctive relief, and that issue might...
Are you saying that nothing that happened, none of these seizures have anything to do with the city government? Your client isn't involved, or what?
City police officers, in the course of their law enforcement duties, arrest people and do seize the property.
Right. If they're seizing it unconstitutionally, the fact that there's a state statute doesn't obviously excuse their conduct.
Well, it may not excuse their conduct. The city, though, none of the officers have been sued. The city has been sued. The city is not under Monell. Would not be liable here or responsible for any wrongdoing by police officers, violations of the Constitution at all, and for that reason we couldn't be responsible for, among other things,
be enjoined.
Well, an injunction could run against anyone, although we assume that there would be a declaratory relief if declaring it unconstitutional, go back to the drawing board. I'm not sure.
Are they seeking anything else from you?
Well, I assume that they would seek attorney's fees from us, from the city.
Oh, attorney's fees.
And since the city, of course, is not...
Well, isn't this premature? I mean, why not wait till they ask for attorney's fees?
Well, I think they have asked for attorney's fees, which would be, as a matter of course, under 1983, but would only run against parties who were liable, legally responsible, accountable, and we're not one. We're a stakeholder here. We are only in this case.
Okay. Okay, that's clear. Thank you, Mr. Henriquez. So, Mr. Peters, has time expired? No, your time has expired. Okay, well, thank you.